So if you can look in the mirror and say, who are you, to yourself, and answer that question, then a lot of the other answers are going to fall into place. You know, creative decisions and aesthetics and like themes and ideas and directions for your work and how to create a brand for yourself. Like all these things will be more easily answered if you know who you are.
You are listening to One More Question, a podcast by the people of Nice Work. One of the things we often catch ourselves saying is, can we ask you one more question? This podcast is all about sharing the best conversations we have had with significant builders, experts, and communicators. The people we encounter and work with as we go about helping you build brands people care about. Season 4 is based on our exploration of Web3, NFTs, and all things metaverse. We're seeing an explosion of creativity and brands popping up all over this new space. Yet the rules seem to be different, and experimentation is not only expected, but welcome. Follow our conversations with the designers, the builders, and the visionaries shaping Web3 and the metaverse. I'm your host, Ross Drakes. Today on the podcast, I'm talking to Jason Naylor. Jason is a New York City artist known for bright colors and even brighter themes, commonly found on large-scale murals around the world. His work explores the communication of human emotions using organic shapes, bold colors, and a strong design aesthetic. Jason has worked with various brands like Coach, Pepsi, Toyota, and Microsoft, all while maintaining an authentic brand. We met him while working on Project Nice. His relentless positivity and kindness translates across many mediums and applications, from murals to NFTs and even a Lamborghini. Jason brings a fresh taste of love and kindness to all his projects and desires to use his work to spread love, good vibes, and also do some good in the world. We talk about the power of conviction in your values and how that can help you stand out and differentiate yourself, how it will serve as a magnet to attract the right people and repel the wrong ones. He also shares how he's created a simple formula that allows him to be expansive in his work, but clear in his branding. Enjoy. Jason, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a long time organizing, and it's the first recording of 2024. So welcome aboard the interview.
Thank you, man. It's good to be here. I mean, we've been working on this. We've been trying to put this together for like a year, I think.
Yeah. But we, you know, you have to be persistent in these times because people are
too busy dudes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not a huge, I don't necessarily believe that every individual is a brand, but when I think about kind of Jason Naylor, there are sort of pieces that come to mind. There's obviously this explosive use of color, and just crazy combinations of color that get more and more outrageous, but then also go in the other direction completely. And there's mural painting as a kind of big theme. But then I guess the bit that follows through all of this, which is I think how we came into each other's orbit, is positivity. Is this something you've deliberately designed, or did it kind of end up this way because of a confluence of things?
Well, I mean, over time, the positivity thing is kind of who I am. You know, like I'm a very upbeat, positive person for the most part. Like I'm a human being, obviously. Like I have my moments of being sad or down or cranky or whatever. But generally, I'm a pretty positive person. And over the years, like over time doing the work, I kind of realized that the best work and the most meaningful work for me was when I tried to put myself into the work. You know, and artists always talk about this, like put yourself into the work. So if you end up skateboarding, like do work about skateboarding or whatever. And for me, I mean, I like to do work that speaks to my passions and my interests, but I think it became more about putting my human self into the work. And so it is a deliberate thing. Like I found that being myself in the work just turned into being positive and trying to spread positivity and positive messages and kindness and love and all these things, because that's who I am. So it kind of is a natural fit, but I'm deliberate about it in that I'm aware that it resonates with people I know that it's a strength to my work. And so I specifically design things around it now because I've learned that.
Mm. That's super interesting because we did this project, Project Nice. And one of the things that we learned very quickly is that the internet can be quite a cynical place. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to do something nice or something positive, there's always this question of, what's going on here? Like, why are you being nice? Why are you, why are you sort of doing this thing? Have you encountered that as you've been through that journey?
Yeah, I have. And my question back to the world is like, why is it so surprising that someone's nice? You know, like, why is that difficult for you? Or why does that stand out? And what does that say about you? You know? Mm. So I have encountered that. And I think it's an ongoing problem in our culture. You know, it's related, in my opinion, to like toxic masculinity. And the cynicism is maybe that, you know, it comes with like the trolling and kind of the dark parts of the internet. But generally people do seek and gravitate towards kindness and towards positivity. And I think those that maybe have a negative, you know, it's a mirror. People that live in a negative space don't enjoy the positivity. But for the most part, I found there is a tribe of humans like across the globe on the internet and otherwise that love it, you know, and it resonates with them. And so while there's always going to be someone, there's always going to be a troll. There's always going to be someone who's cynical. There's always going to be someone who like doesn't love it. You know, there's always someone that doesn't love anything. It doesn't matter if the work is positive or colorful or scratchy and black and white or whatever. You always have your tribe and your ambassadors and your followers and your supporters. And you always have people that don't necessarily fit in that box. So I think the world needs more positivity. The fact that you and I are here talking about it, you know, like it's definitely a thing. And I'm not rattled by the fact that some people don't love it.
I like that. So you say you put yourself into the work and that's where the positivity comes from. The choices around kind of color and the sort of explosiveness. I mean, I'm looking at your background here and it's also really sort of full of color, but your sort of internet personality is like super colorful. How did that come about?
You know, it kind of evolved over time because the work that I was making 10 years ago, which is hard to find because I don't show a lot of it, is sort of this tortured artist, dark, you know, explorative thing. And I've gone through phases of my of my work. I've gone through phases of my life, you know, and the work reflects that. And so, you know, over the past 10 years, I've kind of evolved with my work to where promoting my values is part of it, and promoting kindness and positivity is a big theme in my work. And so the color became a design decision. You know, how do I reinforce the messaging? And the best way to do that was with color. And it's not about, for me, it's not about like pretty colors. I hope you think it's pretty, you know, if you like my work or whatever, but it's not about pretty colors. It's about reinforcing this message. And the message is not this pretty passive message. It's aggressive, you know, it's confident. And it's like, I like electric colors because the message is, you know, positivity and kindness. It's not this like pretty passive thing to me. It's this confident thing that like we're boldly standing for something that we believe in. And this electric color palette that I like reinforces that.
I love that. I mean, there's so much in there for, I think, people to think about. Like it's something that's deeply personal to you, but also important to you. And then you've thought about what is the architecture around that sort of elevates that and reinforces it and sort of signals that. I was listening to a psychologist interview and they were talking about the vast majority of the data that human beings input into themselves, and it's how we form our identities and our opinions and all of this stuff comes in the form of photons. And I love that thought that there's photons sort of designing us and helping us sort of think about who we are and what's important to us. And yeah, I guess within that, I love that you're using the color so deliberately to reinforce the message, which is in turn fed by values.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny about the photons because I'm not a scientist, but I've done a little research, obviously, to be able to understand like what I'm doing. And it is science. You know, the like a human being walking down the street seeing something brightly colored in front of them, like that has a neurological impact on them, you know? Mm. And so it's not just like, this is a thing that I believe. This is actually a physiological thing that's happening to human beings, like in life, you know, and color has a big impact on people in many ways, including like jogging your memory or like affecting the way you feel right in that moment, or even like causing things like surprise or joy. And, you know, it's a powerful thing. So it's like, the more I've read about it and tried to understand it, the more I've been able to harness it to actually do what I'm trying to do, you know, to actually reinforce the message.
It is. I mean, color theory is a fascinating thing. I mean, in Western culture by and large has abandoned color in a lot of our infrastructure and environment and fashion. If you look at interior design and clothing and all of these things, they are fairly monochromatic. And then you look at cultures, you know, places like India and Tibet and the East, where color is just everywhere. Like if you go to these temples, it's just an explosion of visual. And then you go to some of the institutions in the West and they're quite muted. And I think it's interesting that the color still stands out. So it's not like the innate response to color has gone away. It's just our sort of cognitive approach to it has shifted into an interesting space.
Yeah, it's like so neutral, you know. Like I mean, it's funny that you bring that up, because that's been something that's noteworthy about my practice in New York. And New York is the ugliest city, you know. Like, I mean, it's beautiful architecturally from afar, but like walking down the street in New York is gross, and it's gray and it's dull. And you know, the excitement comes from other things in New York. Like the magic and color of New York is not necessarily visual. It's not something you see, you know. Like I'm looking out my window and I have a beautiful view of the New York skyline and it's gray, you know. It's like muted brown and gray. And so for me, it's like putting like fluorescent colors on a wall in Brooklyn is so loud because Brooklyn is so gray and so dirty. Mm. And then you have this like bright colored thing that smacks you in the face, you know, and it has even more impact. Like if I were to go paint a wall in India or like in South America where all these buildings are all pink and blue and green, like it wouldn't have the same effect. I'm sure people might like it or whatever, but like it wouldn't be this like blaring thing.
Mm. But I love that because it's, I guess, the two tie together, because you're standing in the space of sort of radically being positive, you know, in the face of potentially so much negativity, but at the same time, also the environment, you can do it. Although if you do look in the ponds that form by the sidewalk, you know, that kind of New York soup, sometimes those can be quite colorful in their material makeup. Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's like New York is a city that never sleeps. And to see the color of New York, like visually, you have to see it at night. Because at night, New York is colorful. But by day, it's like gray and dull. You know, visually. Mm. Not, you know, like there's tons happening that's exciting and beautiful and whatever. But visually, it's kind of dull.
Mm, I like that. But I also noticed that you wear a lot of black. So you don't color your body. You color your work, which is interesting.
Well, I mean, my body is actually like, there's a lot of color on my body. I wear all black generally. Mm. Yeah. It's hard to see me in color.
I love it, and
that's deliberate. I mean, I think it's, you know, I can go into the metaphor of it all. And I love the metaphor of the balance of darkness and light. And that's important in my work because I use a lot of black in my work as well. I think that for me, like wearing black has been, I've always worn black and it's what makes me feel confident, you know, and I you know, it's not such a like metaphorical decision per se, but I do like the idea that the color goes on the wall or on the canvas. You know, I'm not the art, I'm the artist. And so, you know, I don't want to be the spectacle. I want the work to be the spectacle.
Mm. I like that. It's also, I guess, interesting that if you remove the choice of what to wear, it frees your cognitive energy up to, or your creative energy up to focus on other pieces.
It's true.
Now I'm interesting. I mean, one of the videos that I watched of yours actually the other day is you were at some sort of a big event and there were people very excitedly letting you spray paint onto their shirts while they were kind of wearing them. And the thing that struck me the most out of that is, was the expression that they were wearing when that was happening. Like, this was the one of the single greatest things that's happened to them in a long time. There was like a deep kind of joy happening there. How do you end up in a space where people are so elated and excited to have you sort of like spray paint on them, and they'll probably keep that shirt for the rest of their life along with the memory?
I love that you brought that up. It's so funny. And like, it's such a good question. Like, how do you just spray paint on someone and have them love it? You know, like, it's interesting. I mean, that was a job I was doing in Vegas for an audio, like a tech brand that makes speakers and headphones, stuff like that. So during that, they were having a trade show convention. And during that, they invited me to come paint on like their products and t-shirts and tote bags and things like that for the attendees. And there was a DJ, and I started to coordinate with the DJ on like, how can we, you know, we were talking and it was like, how can we amplify, you know, how can we work together to amplify what's happening here? And so we put together this little thing where the DJ was going to do like a karaoke kind of situation, invite people, like attendees, to come up and use his microphone to like sing whatever they were playing. And then at the same time, we gathered a couple of people from the client group who wanted to be painted. And obviously we couldn't do like a body painting or anything, so we just got blank white t-shirts. And then we coordinated the DJ and I so that I was painting to the rhythm of what he was playing. And in order to do that, I had to paint both at the same time. So I was like doing this kind of like two-handed spray job, which was actually kind of complicated for me. But the audience was kind of, there was like this audience that had gathered. And so there were all these people like kind of like shouting and like participating. And then there was people trying to like do the karaoke with, they were playing like hip hop music. And it came together to where we're all working at the same time to make this little like mini event happen. And so the two people that got painted, they were so hyped about it. And I told them, I'm like, just like, look up, you know, cause I'm going to spray you and just like look up so that the overspray kind of dissipates and you can breathe a little bit. And they're both kind of looking up, grinning and everything, but it was like all syncopated to the music and it was really cool. And so, I mean, that was actually a job. And I think this, you know, this is like a moment for me to like express gratitude, obviously, like this is my job. You know, it's rare that someone gets paid to go paint on people, you know, in in a convention center in Las Vegas. So it's, you know, I'm fortunate to do what I do.
But I also think it's testament to the focus and the body of work over a period of time that somebody's so excited to do that. Like if you went to a random hip hop party and was like, I'm going to start spray painting on you, you know, and no one knew who you were, you'd probably have a very different experience, you know, of how people react to that. But there's an element, you know, and we're going to talk about how you kind of carry your work across multiple mediums and multiple experiences, but there's an element of people want a little bit of the thing that you've created, you know, and it can seamlessly transition into a branded experience that somebody can take away and have a positive experience with.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think it's special to know that there are people who do want a piece of what I do, and whether that's, you know, a painting or a mural or to be painted on, it's like that's a reward for the work that I put in, and I love it. It feels great. You know, like I feel so excited when people want part of what I'm doing.
I mean, like, imagine Citibank did an experience downtown New York where they offered people free white t-shirts and they could spray paint on you. I doubt there would be a massive line of individuals lining up to get that experience in their space.
Yeah, true.
But let's talk about, I mean, you talked about this idea that there's this mission of yours to spread this. And, you know, looking back through your work, there's lots of digital work, because that's the kind of the storefront or the kind of exposure front of the generation or the time we live in. But I mean, you did a few projects, like metaverse-based projects. So there was the Super Rare exhibition. There was the painting, like Positivity in the Metaverse. There was Hue Motions. There was a whole bunch of kind of pieces that you did there, you know, and you do obviously lots of brand work. But how do you kind of carry Jason Naylor through these very different sort of mediums, and it's not just a medium of visual, but it's also a medium of distribution and a medium of engagement, because it's very kind of different. In the one, you're asking people to purchase a digital object. In Instagram, you're just sort of giving it away, and the currency is almost attention. It's a slightly different engagement. But how do you see your way through these different pieces and keep Jason Naylor sort of aligned in all of it?
I mean, it's an ongoing battle. Like, some of it kind of naturally falls into place with the parameters that I've kind of built for myself as a brand. And I come from design and branding, and you know, I started my career as a graphic designer, and I studied graphic design. And so I come from a branding background, and I think that helps in looking at myself and my work as a whole and as a big picture. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, if you go through a branding exercise, and I don't want to dive too deep into this because this is not a branding conversation, but, you know, the basics of branding are, you know, like, you know, you have an identity, and you position yourself, or you position, you know, whatever it is that you're branding, and then you have constraints that you live within, right? And so for me, I've kind of positioned myself with my values and with my aesthetic as the constraints. And so whenever I go to design something or create something, I try to work within the constraints, and it's actually pretty easy. It's formulaic. Like once you've landed on, you know, a pattern or a set of rules or constraints that you work within, it's easy to just keep doing it. And for me, like the visual constraints are kind of minimal, because it's like, the sky's the limit. My work is very maximalist. I can use any or all colors. You know, the biggest constraint that I have is when I'm limited by color. You know, if it's a three color thing, then that's a huge constraint. But for me, it's like, I can do whatever I want, as long as the piece of work fits within the visual constraints and supports the values. And so, like, I'm not going to do overly political work or something that promotes, you know, like, I'm not going to promote something with my work that I don't believe in, basically. And so whenever I make the work, you know, it all kind of fits within these constraints. And then, to answer your question, like, when it goes to be an NFT, or when it goes to live on Instagram, or whether it's for a brand, I think that's when marketing kind of comes into play. But really, it's just, the work is all the same. I'm trying to tailor the pieces for the audience and, you know, for the market. So if it's digital, maybe it has a little animation. If it's a brand, maybe it like nods to what the brand is trying to accomplish. But really, I'm just doing the same thing always.
I like how simple you make that sound, that the constraints are what makes it all come together. But, you know, I think there's a few pieces in there that's that are useful, is that setting those parameters are really important. And you holding your parameters when you're collaborating or engaging with other brands or other things is also how you build your brand. It's because if you allow them to sort of dictate what those parameters are, it can sort of lose you in that engagement. And interestingly, it's not the reason that they came to you to do the, you know, like they saw something and they're like, we would like to participate in this. But then sometimes in those engagements, they get kind of lost, you know, in amongst whatever it is that they're trying to achieve. You know, I love that you talk about this like it's a formula, because I think that's something that almost any brand, any company, any individual can work on, is what is your formula, and, you know, how do you stick to that? Because you say it's all the same, but like if you go and scroll through your website or your Instagram, it's all very different, you know, like it's different. It doesn't feel like you're just doing the same thing over and over again. It feels very dynamic and very diverse. But now that you say that, I can kind of look at it as a body and see the framework underneath it all.
Well, first of all, thank you. I mean, that's a big compliment. It's like, and I don't want to like do the same thing over and over again, but I do want to use the formula always. And so to your point, I mean, I realize that it does sound kind of simple, and I think that it kind of is, but landing, you know, finding and achieving the formula for yourself is not simple. Once you have it, then working within it is.
So I'm interested to sort of explore with you, like, how did you find your, like, what process did you go through to sort of distill down that formula for yourself?
I mean, the simple answer is just putting in the work. You know, the more work you do, the more you draw, the more you paint, you know, whatever it is you're doing, like the more you do it, the more you'll start to see patterns in what you're doing. And I think it's important to do personal work, you know, like as a designer, you know, back to like the brand stuff you were talking about, I'm very protective about what I do with brands because it's important that I'm maintaining my voice and my message. And if I don't, now I'm working as a designer or an illustrator. You know, a designer often loses themselves, or an illustrator often loses themselves, apart from their style, in the work, because they're asked to do whatever the client wants or whatever the brand needs. Mm. And as an artist, I think this is the difference. The artist needs to maintain the expression of what they're doing. And so to collaborate with a brand is different than to be hired by a brand. Mm. And so I'm very particular about doing that kind of thing, because I don't want to go use my style to do whatever the brand wants. I want to use my voice to team up with the brand to amplify. And so back to the question, I think the patterns that you see in the personal work, you know, like everyone needs to be doing commercial work or doing work that pays their bills. And I believe in that. It's important. But at the same time, you have to be doing personal work, because that's where you find yourself. And the more personal work you do, the more you see the patterns. And once you see the patterns, that's the formula. Mm. So you start to recognize, look at the big picture, look at the body of work, and like, what are you repeating? You know, and if it's an aesthetic, or if it's an organic line that you keep drawing, or if it's a message or a theme, like whatever you start to see repeating, that is the shape of the work, and you have to follow that. So to find your own formula, I think it's just that. You just keep putting in the hours and then looking for the patterns.
Mm. I like that, because it's, I guess, there's an element of like exploration and kind of play. But interestingly, you know, when we do a lot of work with people to help articulate their purpose, and we deliberately don't use the word discover, because I don't think you can discover it, because it's already there, because most people are already operating. You know, it's often just not clarity, or they haven't spent the time to sort of articulate it. And I think this is the almost the practice and visual component of that, is how do you reflect on the work you're doing and look at what's working. And interestingly, I think from a marketing or attraction perspective, the deeper you go down that pattern, you know, and that concept, the more you become an expert, the more you become unique and interesting and, you know, kind of appealing, because you've kind of followed that thing. But if you just sort of flitter around and copy all the styles that are around, there's like no... there's something definitive that people can go, oh, like, I get it. I can see it. I can feel it. I can understand it, you know, and I'm either love it or I don't. And that's a good thing, because some, you know, you can't have, what does Nas say? You can't have fans if you don't have enemies, you know, so yeah. Somebody needs to love you, you know, so that, and that means somebody on the other side is probably going to look at it and be like, no, not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 100%. That kind of goes back to what you're saying in the beginning, but like the discover word, that's interesting you bring that up. I mean, I agree. I think a better word is uncover. You know, it's like you put in the work and go deeper down this path, and you're not discovering anything. It's like you're uncovering what's there, because it is there. Mm. But you got to like get rid of all the other shit and like figure out what who you are, right? It's basically, it comes down to like, who are you?
Mm. I love that. But I also think, I mean, something you said earlier, you were talking about the difference between design and art. And I think... you know, coming back to where it started, is design, when it was invented, was called commercial art. Yeah. And I feel like that's a more accurate representation of it, because there's a commercial engagement. So when somebody hires you, they're hiring you to solve a problem, or, you know, or deliver a thing. And that's a perfectly, you know, all right engagement. When they're hiring an artist, they're sort of going, we like what you're doing and we want to sort of stand next to you, you know, and it's a different thing. And I think for for artists to understand that's important, for designers to understand that's important, but I think also clients, depending on, you know, like, are you hiring someone or are you collaborating with someone? And that's a very different mindset to carry into it, because the reason you want to collaborate is because you've seen something you like. And if you don't run the process well, you can often kill the thing that it, you know, the main reason as to why you're having the conversation in the first place.
Yeah, it's such a great conversation. I mean, I love this topic. And I think it's like we can dumb it down. It's a very elaborate kind of situation. And I think we all find ourselves in the, somewhere in the middle of this spectrum. But you can kind of dumb it down by saying that design is about solutions and art is about expression. And for me, like I've tried to focus on maintaining my stance and my position when I work with brands as I'm, you know, as the role, you know, which is my, I'm here to express myself. And if we're going to work together, then we need to be expressing similar things, but I'm not here to solve anything for you. Because that's what a designer, in fact, that's what you should be doing on your side. You know, that's what the designer is there to do. And I know that, and I feel that because I worked as a designer and it wasn't for me. You know, like my role on planet Earth is not to solve problems for other people. My role is to express things that resonate with people and help them to solve their own problems.
I like that. It's just a very clear way you've kind of put yourself. Now, I mean, you sort of, I know you kind of work a lot in New York and in the US, but you're starting to sort of expand into Asia and the rest of the world. Like, how do you translate something into a completely different culture, into a completely, you know, how do you maintain this brand across into places that have completely different psychologies, completely different languages, completely different cultures, completely different like ways of seeing the world? How do you think about that?
I mean, it's been the past year has been interesting in terms of growth for me globally, because I did a lot in Asia market last year. And I mean, I think the reason and some of those things fell in my lap, and which, you know, knock on wood, like I'm really grateful for that. And I think the reason that they fell into my lap was because the work that I'm doing actually does translate already. And so I didn't have to do much to figure out how to translate that, and not literally translate like the language, but to translate the work and the, like the themes and the messaging, it kind of fit already. But when I, you know, when I was working on, I had a show in Macau, and when I was working on the paintings for that show, I was cognizant of like what, and researching, you know, what performs in those markets and what performs there, so that I could kind of tailor the direction of what I was doing to fit that. And you know, the big thing that I discovered is that Disney plays a huge role in like the art and design world in Asia. And so my work is not necessarily related to Disney or inspired by Disney, although I think there are a lot of inspiring things that Disney himself did. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily love Disney, and I don't look at it as inspiration for me, but there are certain elements of my work that, you know, certain like little motifs or elements that appear in my work that could connect to Disney. And so I tried to play those up, and that was the best way that I could figure out to like fit what I was doing into that scene, so to speak. And I think it works pretty well. And I did sell some of the work, and what I ended up doing over there was, I think, was a hit, including I was invited to create this Disney sculpture for this show. And it was basically a remix of Mickey. And that's not something I really do. Like, it's, you know, it's like every artist at some point in their life is going to do their own Mickey, they say, you know, and I did. Like, it sort of worked out that I did mine, you know, but that's not my move. Like, I'm not the guy who does like remixes of other IP, you know, that's not my move. But it kind of just happened, and it was cool and fun and interesting, and that's what succeeded over there.
That's super interesting. So you actually took the time to sort of think about how you fit into that world, you know, instead of like how do I show up here, you know? And I think that's an interesting thing. So I mean, you've been also really busy since we last spoke. I mean, you did Art Basel. Apparently you painted a Lamborghini, you've done some amazing collaborations. Can you talk a little bit about like the sort of pieces that you're putting out over the last, you know, couple of months?
Yeah, I mean, I had such a cool experience in Miami this last year for Art Basel. And I mean, Basel is crazy, especially when you're doing murals, because it's the street art culture is so big in Wynwood, and that's a big part of the Art Basel experience. And I was able to paint 3 murals this past, it feels like a million years ago, but it was a month ago. I was able to paint 3 murals, which was great, with the Wynwood Mural Festival. And Wynwood is so exciting during that time, because like the whole neighborhood, you know, if you're not familiar with Wynwood, the whole neighborhood is painted with murals, and it gets refreshed during December, during Basel. And so to be a part of that is really exhilarating, because it's like all these artists are in the street painting. There's like the whole neighborhood smells like spray paint, and all of these buildings and walls are being transformed simultaneously. And so it's quite a spectacle, and it's exciting to be a part of that. And so I was able to do that. And then the other interesting thing about last year for me, which I'm really happy about, is that I've been trying to manifest painting a car for years. And I didn't want to paint like a Toyota, you know, like I wanted to go big. And I kept talking about it and putting it on my Instagram and like trying to figure out like how does one go paint a car without buying one, or like, you know, doing it yourself. And so last year, these opportunities kind of fell in my lap finally, which I feel like I manifested. But I went to Korea and I painted this car. It was a Hyundai sports car, and it's like their Tesla. It was this new electric car that they're promoting. So I was able to do that. And then that led to me being able to paint the Lamborghini with my friend in Miami. And that was sort of like the, you know, my whole career, I've been trying to manifest this. Like, I want to paint a sports car, and like the sports car of all sports cars lands in my lap finally in Miami with, you know, this guy that's like, do whatever you want. Just paint whatever you want on this car. So we did, and it was amazing. And painting a car is actually really difficult, because it's not a it's not a flat surface. It's not nearly as flat as you think. You know, I mean, maybe a truck, right? But like painting a Lamborghini, like the whole thing is like this teardrop shaped thing, and so it's kind of awkward. And then there's of course a lot of the car that you can't paint, so there's all the logistics of masking and everything, and it's quite a process. But it was amazing. And I feel so excited that I was able to do it, and that it actually like fell in my lap. And it's like, goes to show you, like I kept talking about it and trying to put it out there. And it literally took me years. I think it was like 5 years that I was like, this year I'll paint a car, this year I'll paint a car. And then finally, you know, I got the Lamborghini. So it was really cool.
I love that. So you've got your Mickey, you've got your Lamborghini. I mean, what's next? What are the things you haven't gotten yet?
Let's go to the moon, man.
So I'd love to ask you one more question. And if you could give one piece of sort of advice to an aspiring creative, someone who's building their brand, someone who's kind of starting out and they've been doing their experimentation, what is the thing you would say to them, or the thing you wish you'd heard when you were sort of coming up, you know, as an artist?
Yeah. I mean, I have a million of these. There's so many responses to this question. I think the big one, and we covered this a little bit, but the big one for me, is based on an artist that I admire, Chantel Martin, and the premise of her work is built around the question, who are you? And, I met her maybe, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, and I was always really inspired by her and her work and the messaging in her work. And so she always asked this question, who are you? And I think, so to answer the question, I think the biggest thing that anyone can do, that we can all do and continue to do, is to ask ourselves, like, who are you? You know, look in the mirror and be like, who are you? Because who you really are is what needs to go into the work. And who you really are matters for what you're doing, you know? And if you don't know who you are, like, how can you do your best work? If you don't know who you are, like what will the work even be, you know? Mm. So if you can look in the mirror and say, who are you, to yourself, and answer that question, then a lot of the other answers are going to fall into place. You know, creative decisions and aesthetics and like themes and ideas and directions for your work and how to create a brand for yourself. Like, all these things will be more easily answered if you know who you are. Mm. And I realized that, like, as a young person, knowing who you are is a process, you know, like when you're 20 years old, you don't know who you are. You may think so, you know, but like, I'm not 20 anymore. And looking back at when I was 20, like I had no idea who I was, but I think to start thinking about that is really important.
I think that's a valuable piece of advice, not just for creators, but I think even companies and brands is like, who are you? What is the thing that makes you important outside of the product or the service or the art? It's like, who's that at the core?
Yeah.
I mean, Jason, thank you so much for the work you create. Thank you for pushing so much positivity out into the world. I think we need more people doing that kind of stuff. And thank you for being so free with your time, you know, to come on the podcast and share your work. I definitely took some things away to think about.
Right on, man. Well, thank you for having me. I mean, I'm glad that we finally came together to do it. I mean, it's been a long time in the making, and it's nice because, like, you know, even though it took a while for us to land here, now that we're here, it's like we put in the work to get here. You know, now this is the reward. We could actually like be together and do this.
Yes.
So thanks for having me.
Cool. And thank you for everyone who is listening, and we'll catch you all in the next one. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. We believe sharing knowledge is an obligation. So if you know someone who's building a brand or needs some inspiration for their brand, please share this with them. This is our fourth season, and we'd be grateful if you'd hit that subscribe button so you're the first to know when a new episode is released. Even better, leave a review and tell the world how much you enjoyed listening. One More Question is brought to you by the people of Nice Work. We're on a mission to build purposeful Web3 brands that people care about. We're based in South Africa and serve the leaders of brave companies around the world. If you'd like to know more, work with us, or make a suggestion, please reach out at www.nicework.co.za. Bye-bye.